Blog Talk Radio.
We are listening to Shooting the Breeze with Potpourri People and mass media personality Vivian Louise Sharp on Cleveland Smooth Jazz, WJZZ, at ScreenWorksEntertainment.net.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to ScreenWorks Entertainment, Shooting the Breeze with Vivian Louise Sharp. And our special guest tonight, our special guest is Mr. Martin Gangley. Mr. Gangley, are you here?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming and being with us today. We have a half hour and we're going to speak all the way and make good noise here on the airways until then. And I'm starting off with your background and some of the things that you like to do and tell people about you. And the first thing I see is that you are a learned person. You have a lot of education. So which one would you like to talk about first, your book? What's the name of your book? I don't have that. Let's start with that. Let's start with the name of your book.
So the name of my book is called A Meeting with My Inner Child.
A meeting. Okay. Now, how did you come up with the inner child?
So the inner child, it's been around for quite some time, but it's not usually talked about. So the inner child, it's pretty much it starts with trauma. So all the trauma that you suffer as a little kid, that's the age of your inner child. So one of the definitions, there's many definitions, you know, it says, you know, the form of your truest self, the mirror reflection of who you are without any filter or fake persona. Your inner child is what makes you whole.
So
a lot of the things that have happened to you in the childhood stage, you carry into the adult stage. So, example, isolated. They didn't allow you to have a voice. They didn't allow you to talk or speak. As an adult, you end up over-talking people, cutting them off, feeling like you really have to get that message out because you didn't have those opportunities as a kid.
Oh, my goodness. So, you said something that did something to me. Okay. Inner child trauma. What do you think that, did you have an opportunity to get your message out, or do you have another message to put out with your book?
I think I have a message to put out with my book. It's really interesting. So for my day job, I teach substance abuse, and I teach stress management and the support groups and stuff. And I was just teaching one day, and I thought, you know what, this would be cool to kind of speak about the inner child. And then as I was teaching about it, I started learning things about myself that I kind of suppressed and pushed away. And I was like, whoa, this is insane. And I would be stopping during my teachings like, that's me. This is in reference to me. And everybody was like, you should write a book on it. And I was like, no, I don't think I should. But they kept saying it. No, you need to write a book because this is like insane the way you deliver the message and how you get it out to us. And that's how I ended up writing a book. I never thought I would be an author or write a book or anything like that, but it was something new, it was something fresh. And the book is not one of the books that you can, you know, read and put back on a shelf. It's like a blueprint. So if anytime something comes up, you can go and reference the book.
Wow. That sounds exciting. I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about the inner child. I've heard that phrase, you know, inner child, but I've never thought about it like that. And you've got me thinking about myself. And tell me about your master's in as a personal trainer. I'm interested in exercise. Tell me about your certificate as a personal trainer. We'll move back to the inner child as well.
So,
personal trainer.
My personal trainer certification is really interesting. I was having a conversation with somebody, and I was trying to explain to them because they were going to the gym and working out extremely hard, and they were putting in so much effort. And then they were complaining, like, I'm in so much pain. And I was telling them, you know, you need to go and see a doctor because you may have some slipped disc or some things like that, and you're overdoing it. You're going to really injure yourself. And their response to me was, well, you don't know what you're talking about because you're not a personal trainer. So my response was, oh, what, I'm not. So let me go and take some training and become a personal trainer. So I saw it as a challenge. So I went and became a personal trainer, and then I went back to the person, and I said the same thing, and they were like, oh, well, okay. And then they ended up getting into, like, a car accident. It was like a rollover. And
what?
They went to see and the doctor did an x-ray on the back and was like, you know, you have slipped disc in your back, but it's not from the accident. Do you work out? Do you lift weights? And the person looked at me and was like, oh, my God, he was just telling me that it was from my weightlifting. And I was like, see, but I wasn't a person. So it was helpful.
But you had his mind to figure it out anyway. So you had that ability, innate ability to do that, to tell him that. And even though you hadn't been trained, you are trained. That's one of your fields, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now one, I just talked to a young man earlier today about food, and I'll bring up your behavioral health consultant. Tell me about that, the health consultant part, behavioral health.
So when we talk about behavioral health, we kind of talk about the full body. So everything starts in the mind. So if you have your mindset, low motivation, you know, poor self-esteem, you're not going to get up and go and do anything. If you're not open to any type of discussions and stuff, then you're not going to be open to any type of criticism or any type of redirection or prompts or guidance. So we talk about having a healthy mindset. We talk about things like positive affirmations, you know, I'm going to do the best I can. You know, I'm going to be happy today. I'm going to take things as they come. I'm worth it. You know, I'm proud of myself. One step at a time. Things like that. And then when we get into the whole health aspect, that's a little more complicated because each body is genetically made up differently. No body is the same. And it's either from a culture, our DNA genetics, you know, or just our diet that we have from kid to adult. So your health and combining that with working out is going to affect you in different ways. If somebody's a vegan, then you got to do a plan for a vegan, because when we talk about working out, we talk about like the proteins and things that you need to eat and stuff like that. So we have to look at supplements and things like that to help the people out.
Yeah, when you say supplements, do you mean like vitamin? What do you mean? What would be a supplement? What do you mean? I know what I mean, but what would you mean?
So a supplement could be like a protein powder, just a basic like whey protein powder. But you can also mix stuff with that. You know, you can mix oatmeal, you can mix bananas, strawberries, things like that. You can add milk. So it just really depends on what the person's diet is. If they have allergies, because that's another big thing. So a lot of times we will tell the person to go and get like a physical assessment by the doctor, test them for allergies and stuff, because you don't want to put somebody on a diet and have them taking things and then they end up having anaphylactic or something like that, because then that becomes a liability. So
we
want to make sure that the person is like conscious about what their health is, because a lot of times people will just walk in the gym and say, I want to lose weight or I want to work out. And then you ask them, like, you know, what's your health history? Do you have high blood pressure? Do you have heart conditions? Do you have asthma, COPD, things like that? And they're like, no, the last time I went to the doctor was 4 or 5 years ago. And we're like, yeah, we need to get you fully assessed and make sure that you're appropriate.
Get in there and hurt yourself. Hurt yourself not only emotionally, but physically. You can hurt yourself. I know that. Trying to be and working out to be healthy as well. Now, the book that you I have the title of your book? I think I A Meeting with My Inner Child. Is that the name of your book that you have now that we're discussing?
Yes.
Okay. And is this your first book, or which one is it?
This is literally my first book. It's my first time. All of this is new to me.
Oh, wonderful. You're in the right place. You'll go far.
You
will go far. I have a magic touch, and so does Mr. Myron. A Meeting with My Inner Child. That's very interesting. I think that I would like to ask you a question about the two PhDs that you got. Was that hard for you in psychology and in medicine? What do you do with that?
So with that, I started off studying psychology, and then I realized that medicine and psychology kind of goes together. So I study holistic medication, which is like earthly stuff, leaves and things like that, pulling from like Mother Earth, and then I study pharmaceutical. And the one thing that I found, just even in mental health, if you take a patient that has, let's say, I don't know, bipolar disorder, and we put them on a specific medication, by the time that person is getting their baseline where it needs to be, now we have to factor in what type of damage has this done to this person's organs. Because the body is not to break down as much medication as being put into somebody. You factor somebody that has mental health, so they have a medication for that, high blood pressure, a medication for that, maybe a seizure condition, a medication for that, their multivitamins, and any other thing that they're adding on to it. The body cannot break it down, so there's always residual residue in the body, and then that can affect the organ. So we start seeing things like kidney failure and liver failure and things like that. So I always try and take the holistic route. And I've done therapy before, so I've done children's therapy. I was a trauma therapist. I work with adults now in substance abuse. Mm-hmm. But I know with my kiddos, the doctors were just like, well, we'll put meds on this person and see how it goes, and we'll just revisit later. It's just too much medication. My thought process in it was, the goal is we get a kiddo in, we get them on medication to stabilize them, and then we wean them off. The whole idea is to put them on medication to stabilize their mind, so when we're having our therapy and we're having our trauma therapy and stuff, we can have them at a certain baseline, and then we can slowly wean them off or maybe titrate the medication down.
What would you call yourself? Because you have so many wonderful scientific and biology and mind, everything. What is your major title? If it's all of that, tell me what your title is. If you have a title.
And my day job is just Dr. Martin. That's what they call me, Dr. Martin.
Uh huh. Dr. Martin. And the specialties that you do. What do you focus on the most? You seem to focus on the most.
Mental health. My specialty is mental health, so I do all the behavioral health stuff. So I deal with the trauma and the crisis and the stress management and the support and substance abuse and stuff. Because everything starts from mental health. You know, you can be having a good day and you can jump on the TV and all it takes is one bad news story and there's your day. Or you jump on social media and one bad status posting and there's your day. And it's often swept under the rug because it's so complicated to deal with. And a lot of people, even as therapists, when we go in and we deal with that stuff, we take that trauma home with us. So after our sessions and stuff, we have to do meditations and prayer and things like that, because if not, you'll take all that stuff home with you. And stress is the number one killer in the world, not drugs, not alcohol, not stuff, because people pick up substances because they're under stress. People have heart attacks because under stress. So everything goes back to stress, which goes back to the brain, which goes back to mental health. So the goal is to get people to go back to their inner child, because everybody has suffered trauma. Your very first traumatic experience as a child, your mother giving birth. She's pushing you out of a very small orifices, and you're covered in fluids that don't belong to you in a room full of people you've never met with bright lights. That's traumatizing.
When you don't even know what's going on, it is,
And
I like the way you describe that.
Yeah, we see it as beautiful because, you know, as adults, it is beautiful. This wonderful bundle of joy has just arrived, but the baby's like, what just happened? I was cool where I was. Why am I? What's going on? That's why when the baby, thing that we do is we give the baby to the mom, because the baby will immediately pick up a familiar scent, and that's where the safety and security comes into place. Oh, this is familiar. This is the person this is my person. So that's why that's the first thing, is to put the baby on the mother's chest.
Oh, that's wonderful. You have lived such a short life and so much in such a short life. How did you do that? And you still are growing. What's your next step? Do you want to write another book? Do you want to stay in mental health? What would you think you'd like to do for relaxation?
I am definitely going to write two more books. My next book is going to be about the outer child. So the outer child is impulsive, has a lack of respect for authority, doesn't care my way or the highway. I'm going to do things how I want. I don't care about consequences. The inner child is, I'm scared, I'm abandoned, I'm afraid. Why did people leave me? Why am I alone? Why doesn't anybody love me? So the outer child ends up being the adult that you grow into because of the lack of care and concern that your inner child didn't get. So as an adult, that's where all these behaviors come in. And I was explaining to my substance abuse group that when you're in a household and the parents are, like, really sheltering you and you don't get to make those mistakes, when you grow older, you're going to go out and drink. You're going to go out and party. But the difference is now that you're an adult and you have the mindset of freedom, we go over the limit. And then we start abusing things because we're trying to fill in the gaps of all of the ages of that child that we didn't get. And then this is how some of us grow up to end up being narcissists. We all carry narcissistic traits. We all carry traits of depression and anxiety and stuff. There's just certain things in life that causes a psych break that exacerbate those and have them come out. So
yeah,
the inner child. The inner child, we go back to the inner child and we see where it started from. I sent a copy of the book to my mom and it unlocked some trauma and she was like calling me and she was just like asking me like, why am I so scared of 4th of July? And I read your book and now I know I'm starting to open up some things that happen because a lot of times with trauma, the brain will suppress it in order to protect us. So
yeah.
We may go into a room or an environment and just not want to be there, but I can't tell you why. That fight, flight, or flight. And it's like, I got to get out of here. Well, why do you got to get out of here? Well, I don't know. I just, something's weird. The brain cannot distinguish what happened 10 years ago and what happened 10 minutes ago, which is why when we have our triggers on our trauma responses, we respond right there in the moment. Panic attacks, anxiety attacks, because our brain cannot distinguish. We have to do things like self-talk. Hey, it's okay. You're safe. You're in a safe place. Let's do some grounding. Let's do some deep breathing. You know, let's reach out to a support system. So the way I've always operated with my therapies and stuff is worst case scenario. See, we, as a culture, humans, we are reactive and not proactive, even in mental health. We have all these tools set up, but then we're not proactive with it. So I always talk to whether it's a suicidal patient or a patient with depression, let's think of the worst thing that you could have happen and what your response would be, and let's tackle that. Because if we tackle the worst thing, when you're having your moment in your meltdown, I can bring up, remember that worst thing we talked about when you tackled that? Which one would you say is greater? And they usually say what we've already talked about. So we can handle what's going on now. And we're usually able to redirect and prompt and things like that. If the daily struggle, you have to keep doing it, but you want to give your clients the tools to be able to do it when you're not around, because you're not going to be around forever. You know, I'm not going to be in the field forever. What am I going to do?
Right. Well, you know what? I'm listening to you, and you speak so easily. Easily, the words come easy, and I'm wondering at your age, you're so young, how did you get all of that relaxation in your method of counseling? I mean, have you always been able to speak your words so fluently with such ease about your field?
No.
You read a lot.
I did a lot of studying, and with schooling, 14 years, that was a lot of studying and writing and presentations and speeches. But I even speak in the book, I say in one part of the book that this isn't just your story, it's our story. So it's a lot of things kind of coincide with me. I spent 18 years in foster care. I suffered every level of abuse that you can think of. And I had one of two options. I could either run away, commit crimes, and do bad things. And when I tell people my story, they will even say to me, hey, I don't agree with your behaviors, but I understand why you did it. Or I can rise above. And then when I have that conversation, people are like, wait, that happened to you? How'd you do it? Like what the question just happened. I had to take time and sit with myself. And that's one thing that we don't do as humans. We don't sit with ourselves until we're forced to sit with ourselves, whether it's trauma, drop loss, things like that. That's when we sit with ourselves. We don't consciously say, hey, I'm going to sit and work through things and deal with it. Things have to happen. For me, I had to run away. I ran away from the foster care system, and I had just signed up for the Marines, and it wasn't even like a week or two later, September 11 happened. So I had military come to my school looking for me and my friend who had just signed up for infantry. It was
so they were taking you in. Oh, my.
Yeah. They were going to take us in, but because I was in foster care, my foster mom needed to sign one form because I was still like 17. And because that form didn't get, I was okay not to be court-martialed and things, but I panicked. because I had no idea September 11th had even happened. I walked in, people were crying, and my response was, "Who died?" And everybody just gave me these looks like, "What is wrong with you?"
Yeah,
and I walked in the classroom, and the TV was on, and I saw the plane hit the tower, and I asked, I said, "What movie are we watching?" And I saw Fox 2 News breaking story, and I was like, "Oh, my God, what's happening right now?"
So That's
unreal. It was real surreal for me, and I was just like, whoa, like how did I not know this? The world's going to chaos. So a lot of chaotic moments happened with me, my foster care system, many levels of abuse, and I had to sit and deal with my anger because I was an angry kid. All I wanted to do was fight. And I realized that, you know, if you want to help people at your life at some point, then you can't be getting arrested. You can't be doing things like that. You need to be able to sit and process through your trauma and process through what happened to you and work on a healing process so then you can pass down things. Because I also talk in my book about generational curses. And
yes,
generational curses are passed down because of the inner child. If, you know, like I come from nothing, I would get Focus Hope and Goodfellow boxes and things like that. The state would give me stuff. So when I became a parent, I shared a story with my group. I have a 3-year-old son. So I'll go and buy him stuff that has no relevance. Like I brought him a pair of Jordans. He don't even know who Jordan is, yet alone what his shoes got.
Yeah.
But my thought was, I was growing up, that's my inner child speaking. That's my inner child saying, hey, now you can live through your son. So I have to take a step and go, no, he can have shoes. And if he grows up and he wants certain things, that's different. But we oftentimes, if we don't work with our inner child and work on the healing process, we pass that down. Because then he grows up and he feels like my dad made me wear Jordans and all this expensive stuff. I don't want to wear that. So maybe his kid loves certain things because he was forced having certain things. So that's just like an example of it.
That's really the way the brain and the mind and the conscious and the subconscious, they have a large job to do. And we can end up so messed up or so straight, and you wonder how you end up straight because there's so much to remember. And I listen to you talk, and I think about some of the things that you're saying to me, and it's very important for people to know about themselves, and a lot of people don't. And I'm so glad that you are that type of personality, that you have the experience that you do have to do what you are doing. And maybe that's sort of sad to say that, but maybe you had to go through that to reach out to someone else. Maybe you're a blessing for the world. You are a blessing for the world because you took all that punishment, and now you're helping bringing it back. And how do you feel about the world as a such place today, in the day and age that we're suffering with, what you call that, the disease we got? I can't even think of it because I try not to think of it too often.
The mental health.
What's the disease that's going out now, the virus?
COVID?
COVID, yeah. What do you think about COVID as far as where do you think it started? I mean, being in the mental health, I know that, but as a doctor, a person of the, you know, germs and all of that as well, too. What do you think about where did it come from? Because I read something that said it's been here a long time. Time, nothing is new. In the Bible, that's what it talks about. Nothing is new. What are your words on that as far as COVID? What do you think about COVID? What's your opinion?
I think it's a disease that has been here for quite some time. I think it's just laid dormant. There's a lot of illnesses that are laying dormant just out in our environment. And we either we're dealing and touching things that we shouldn't be touching, and we activate these diseases. I actually just am getting over COVID. I got COVID almost 4.5 weeks ago, and I was sitting at work, and my skin started, like, aching, like almost like if you had, like, a sunburn, and your skin is really sensitive to the touch. And I was like, this is weird. So I went in the office. I whipped out a COVID test. I did the little nose thing, and it's supposed to be a 15-minute, not even 10 seconds. When I put the droplets in, those bars lit up twice. I said, how in the world did I survive the pandemic for 2 years working in hospitals and going all over the world, and then I come in this one spot and I get COVID? What are the odds of that? So it's been laying dormant. And we all have genes in our body that can activate diseases and things like that. Like we all carry the cancer in our bodies, and it's activated through stress, high sugar intake, and things like that. But these are things that we essentially take for granted. But I think COVID, I thought eventually that it would go away, but there's always going to be a new disease. There's always going to be a new strand. I think that as a society and as people, we just have to make sure that we're protecting ourselves and wearing our masks, no matter how silly it sounds, and washing our hands and wiping things down. Literally all the stuff we learned in daycare. Wipe your hands, wash your hands, wash your chairs. We've taken those things for granted, and we've become complacent and lax. So now we're seeing an escalation of this illness.
Yes, that's what's happening. Oh, let me ask your opinion about another thing. It's 11:25 now, and before that little machine comes in and whacks us out of here, I want to ask you, what would be your wisdom that you would give to maybe a person, just anyone, to the world? What would be your words of wisdom off your top of your head right now, no deep thinking, to the world listening to you tonight and what they may be going through, some of the things that would make their life unhappy? What would you think you would say to them as far as sticking it out and making it through?
Does that make any sense? Yes, it does. So I would tell them that it all starts with going back to the inner child and working on inner child. The one key point that we must remember is what you do not heal from, you will pass down. So we have to work on healing. And it's not a one-day process. It can take days, weeks, years, but you have to be consistent. You now have to be the parent to the inner child that you have. So all the stuff that you wanted from the parents, the care and the concern, for them to hug you and say, I love you. And there's things that I talk about in books and processes that you can actually go to give the affirmations and stuff. So you have to remember, you have to work on that inner child, because that trauma will get passed down. And we don't do it on purpose. We don't. It's indirectly, because we normalize chaos. So somebody grew up in a chaotic household, as an adult, when they get in a relationship, if it's going great, something's wrong. So we self-sabotage. We start overthinking. Is this person cheating on me? Is this person doing this? Why are you gone so late? Let me see your phone. And that irritates that person, and then we take that as confirmation that something is truly wrong. We just react in the chaotic household that we had as adults. But there's a lot
of processes. What you just said, if you repeat that again, that sounds like something I went through. Where have you been? What, you go shopping, you don't come home with nothing, then you get questioned from your husband or your wife, where have you been? What did you do? Why you don't have any packages? That rings a bell with me so much so that you would not believe it. I went through that. I did go through that. Isn't that interesting? And I have three sons, so I'm passing down some, what do you call that?
Generational trauma.
Generational. And they tell me in somewhere that because you have children, your generational thing can come from the Bible. It's passed down to the child. If you
love God, listening to Shooting.
Oh boy, I'm out. Okay.
Okay.
All right, go ahead and give your last remark to the world. We got time.
Okay, so what you don't hear from, you will pass down. And generational trauma, you are right. It can go back up to about 14 generations. And it is biblical, and it does talk about it in the Bible. But you have to reparent your inner child. You can heal, and you can be able to manage and process and have a better life. But my book talks about all the processes. I break down specific identities of people, specific identities and traits. And a lot of times you will notice a lot of the things that are within you, but it's because of the trauma and the pain. So you have to work through that.
Okay, let's get your where we can reach you. How do we reach you, book-wise or however? How do we reach you if we want to buy your books and everything?
So you can go on to the Amazon store and go into and just type in a meeting with my inner child, and it'll pull up the book. And the book is a picture